So look, if you want to grow your wealth, your income, and increase the amount of time off, then these are the shortcuts that can help. Welcome to the Wealth Creation Podcast. Welcome, everybody. It's Dan Latto speaking. And in today's session, I've got a good friend of mine, Richard. Hey, Richard, how are you doing?
Hi, fine, Dan. Very jealous of you being in Spain and me being in Manchester, but such is life.
Yeah, sorry about that. I've just been on a beach hut. I was just telling Richard about just being on a beach hut and having a coaching session with a client on the beach hut, at the beach hut, on the beach. Really cool. So Richard's specialism, he does lots of things, all very well. But the biggest thing and what we're going to talk about today is mortgages. And we're going to cover buy-to-let mortgages. We're going to talk about residential mortgages. We'll probably talk about equity release. And then I'm sure there'll be bits sticking in there. In between. One of the things that I saw this morning, Richard, actually was that Shelter have managed to successfully sue a lettings agency, the second one, for saying no DSS, which I thought was quite interesting. This was a disabled gentleman who made a phone call to a letting agent and he said, yeah, I'm DSS. And they said, no, no DSS. And then he went to Shelter. And then Shelter have sued him, sued them, the lettings agency. And I think this is something that's going to happen more and more. Once the lawyers get involved, you know, have you been involved in an accident, lawyer?
Yeah.
Moved to the DSS. Have you been declined because you were DSS things? What are your thoughts on that?
Don't get me started on that. Point number one, Shelter is a massive misnomer in that they actually do not shelter a single person at all.
I agree.
I think a political action group. Their intentions obviously come across well, but the issue that us landlords have is that the vast majority of lenders on mortgage conditions do not allow you to actually take DSS tenants. So the landlords, the agent, as a generalisation, is usually correct in saying we can't do it. It's not that they don't want to. They can't because they'll be contravening their own mortgage conditions and could get the mortgage called in. So, you know, he's between a rock and a hard place. And I really don't think Shelter, they may know this, but they don't really sort of make it known, if you know what I mean. And they just try and get their publicity and the brownie points on this. But the landlords can be in big trouble if they contravene their terms and conditions.
Yeah. It's interesting because my last dealings with Shelter was on a Doncaster property with a guy in full-time employment earning £2,000 a month after tax who just didn't want to pay his rent. And they represented him in court. And I'm like, come on, guys, you've got to reach a point where your ethics has to step in. You know, you talk about homelessness and you've got a guy here purposely not paying his rent, making himself homeless just because he doesn't want to, because he knows we can't touch him fundamentally. Yeah, we can get a CCJ. Yeah, we can get bailiffs. We've did all that. He then quit his job. He hasn't got a job. He's got no assets. We ain't getting that money back, you know, but... Yeah, I saw it this morning. I thought I'd share it because I thought it was quite interesting.
No, yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I understand where they're coming from, but, you know, that is the reality of the situation. So you can't really sort of go knocking landlords for not accepting DSS when in the majority of cases, they can't anyway.
Yeah,
so it's the lenders that need to have their terms and conditions changed if they're prepared to do it. But, the fundamentals are, when lenders predominantly buy their money on the wholesale money markets, their terms and conditions dictate that they don't want that sort of tenant there because they potentially view it as more risky. Otherwise, the rates are going to have to reflect that.
Yeah.
So ultimately, it's down to the lenders and how they're getting their funding, not the landlord.
Or if it is illegal to discriminate against that type of person, then Shelter should be going up against the lenders.
Yes,
but they don't do that. They go up against individual landlords with not very deep pockets.
Easy picking.
Rather than lenders with millions of pounds available in finance, in legal resources. Okay, let's talk about mortgages, your favourite subject, no doubt. When you go to sleep, Richard, do you like go to sleep thinking about mortgages? And when you wake up, do you think, oh, you get really excited by them?
That's a good question. Yeah, the answer is... yes and no, in that it's the last few months, particularly under COVID, it has actually been difficult to help clients place mortgages. There have been all the current scenarios regarding landlords taking mortgage payment holidays, etc. But then after that, when they've come to get finance or funding, maybe because they realise that we're going to recession, they might want to remortgage a property, release equity to maybe get a bargain down the road, the lenders are declining applicants because they took the view that, or taking the view that if you've applied for a payment holiday, you are not financially sound as a landlord. Otherwise, why are you asking for a payment holiday? And therefore, why should they lend to somebody who's already declared that they're having financial difficulties?
You see, I think that's not very grown-up thinking by the organisations. Because, like, for example, I took a deferred mortgage thingamajig.
Payment holiday, basically.
A payment holiday. I took one, and I took one on the basis that if I get into trouble, my mortgage costs can be taken out of the equation and I've got a chunk of cash set aside for dealing with whatever that situation was. And as it happened, we never had a situation. I almost have 100% payment rate anyway on my tenants, and we're very fortunate for that. Maybe that's 20 years experience, whatever. But actually that dropped to like 97%. I mean, literally, we had one person who was struggling. We helped. We gave them a payment holiday on their rent. Let me say, rephrase that, a payment deferment. So they're paying it back, 50 quid a month kind of thing, for the next 10 months, 20 months, however long that's going to be. And that made really good financial sense to do that. And I think that, that makes good business. And when the lenders are saying, oh, no, you're in financial difficulty, well, that's not true at all. We just wanted to plan ahead that if we got into financial difficulty, we could solve it before we got there. But now people have been penalised.
You could argue that quite rightly, that was a prudent move to take. But their view, and again, at the end of the day, we're dealing with lenders that have their perspective, and that's what counts from their view. And so their perspective is that as a responsible landlord, and it is a business, you are meant to have reserves to cover you for maintenance, voids, and similar. And usually it would be typically about 3 months of rent. Yeah. So where they were concerned is that day one, landlords would go into the lenders saying, oh, I need this assistance, and when it really should have been after 2 or 3 months. So that's the issue from their perspective. And therefore, that's why they're saying that you from day one are perceived to have had financial difficulties when really you should have had those reserves to get you over that initial period. So that's why they took the stance or taking the stance that they are doing.
Interestingly, I was talking to the owner of a Ferrari dealership, as you do, and he was telling me about how they're really busy right now. The reason they're really busy is two reasons. One is the payment holiday for mortgages. So people have taken that and bought a Ferrari. Yeah. And then the second one was the bounce back loan. Yeah, people have taken that and bought a Ferrari. So people have gone
in. A lot of landlords have taken those loans out on the anticipation they could then use them as deposits for, you know, future purchases because it was cheap money. Okay. But again, lenders have cotton on to this. There was an expose in the Sunday Times of one particular, should we say, trainer stroke mentor who went on YouTube and stated that he had something like 12 businesses going to apply for 12 lots of 50,000. He's going to have over $500,000 in the bank, and then he's going to buy a rake of properties. But that the whole point was that went against the spirit of what a bounce back loan was meant to do, i.e., I'm a business, I'm in financial difficulty, I need to pay my wages of my staff or pay the bills and not spend my portfolio. So he had quite a negative expose in the Sunday Times a few weeks ago.
And let's call him Mr. Brown, shall we?
Yes, Mr. Brown, yes. what also happens, been happening of late, is that I've heard through the grapevine that HMRC are allocating quite a large proportion of their inspectors to look into those sorts of scenarios. I actually had one client stroke friend who shared with me that after he had applied for 3 bounce back loans, the bank looked into him. I think it was just a random audit as they were doing, and they froze his bank accounts without any notice and then took back the bounce back loans and gave him 60 days notice to take his business elsewhere. All unilaterally, no discussions at all. He doesn't really know what he did wrong.
And also, people are not opening bank accounts. Banks are not opening bank accounts right now. We know this because we've acquired a couple of businesses during lockdown. Right. And we can't open new bank accounts.
Yeah. It's proven, There's been a massive tightening. Like I said, whether it's the banks doing audit checks, whether it's HMRC now, et cetera, they have realised that the let's say, the goodwill has been abused. And again, it's from all their perspectives. And it has undoubtedly. Like I say, there's people going buying Ferraris and similar, etc. So they are looking into this. And nobody's really going to put the head above the parapet and admit that they've been investigated and, you know, HMRC are fining them left, right and centre and taking money back. But I can see that an awful lot of people, you know, will become victims of their own, let's say, misdoings.
Yeah, it's funny as well, I always think, because I've been in property for 22 years, I think it is now, and I can never understand why people get to a stage where they play it too close to the edge and might go over the edge on that legal line.
Yeah,
just to get a little bit ahead.
I know.
After people like, and the chap in particular is older than I am, and it's like, why have you done all this for the last 30 years, and then you're now risking this here at this age.
Exactly, absolutely.
And you're going to lose everything.
Yeah.
I just don't get it. Like, you can get successful without cheating, so why not do it that way?
Yeah.
That's much better, and that's how I did it. And when I look back in another 20 years, hopefully I'll still be around, touch wood, when I look back, I've got, that was pure sweat and hard work, and that's what I'm passing on, not cheating in some way to get ahead. I just don't understand that.
I think my personal view is he did it to get the kudos of going on YouTube, but I don't know, however many, you know, people he's got on there, and then word spreads and he can expand his, you know, sort of database for selling courses, that how clever a wheeze he's come up with.
Yeah.
And I think, sadly, you know, he, I do know, has a lot of newbies and naive people who have taken him for his word, who probably also followed him in his footsteps, and they will all come a cropper, unfortunately, etc. But that's life, and you know, hey ho. So you know, you move on.
It always balances in one way or another somehow, and it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yes,
okay,
exactly.
Let's talk about mortgages.
Yeah.
Gets you excited on the morning.
Okay.
So one of the things I was watching just this morning, actually, was a guy in America, and he was saying that his mortgage business is exploding on people refinancing because we've got historic low rates. But that's in America, and a completely different system entirely.
Yes.
What's it been like here in the UK? Are people refinancing, and can they get access to lower rates right now?
Yeah. The simple answer is the whole system post-COVID is massively overloaded at the moment. Lenders' service levels, I've never seen it this bad in all my 20-plus years of dealing with mortgages. For example, one lender that I'm dealing with at the moment for overseas clients, that, for example, particularly they've been blitzed with Hong Kongers due to the changes in the recent political situation there. They've been wanting to invest in the UK. And yesterday, with no notice at all, the bank, where normally they would do lending around about £80,000, £100,000 properties, which is your good bread and butter type stuff for investors, they changed that minimum valuation to £385,000.
Oh, wow.
65% loan to value. The main reason being they just cannot cope with the current levels. Their service levels are really, really, I was going to use the word bad, but it's not their fault. Just everybody's piling in. And they've recognized that they need to do something on a temporary basis to stop this tsunami, a flood of inquiries. Lots of UK landlords, certainly I've been in the business 20 years. I've got some what I would call more long in the tooth mature investors. They have been remortgaging, as you said, to build up their war chest, to release equity, waiting for what will potentially be a recession and likewise a drop in prices. So they want to pick up some bargains. Okay. But likewise, the current relaxation on the stamp duty has meant that an awful lot of predominantly first-time buyers are jumping in on the marketplace. And on top of that, you've got families who may have been locked down for the last few months maybe want a bigger house, maybe a bigger garden. So they are buying in because the stamp duty threshold up to $500,000 is zero at the moment for residential purchases. So I, likewise, like other brokers, have been absolutely blitzed with business at the moment. That, again, it's just been manic. And the lenders at the moment have recognised that they just can't cope. So rates have been going up. They're pricing that in to try and stem the tide. But, for example, today I also read that due to this, they've been tightening up on criteria. And I think about over 30% of residential applications are being declined because the lenders have tightened the screws to again, reflect the fact that they can't cope with this onslaught of business. Yeah. And an awful lot of declines are coming through. So that means brokers like myself, we've got a lot more business. We're having to go back and forth with lenders. So, for example, Nationwide, very, very popular, good household lender, had some good rates. They got blitzed with business. Their delays are about 2 to 3 weeks. So you send information in, it won't be looked at for 2 or 3 weeks. And then invariably the underwriter has got some queries. You send that in and it's another 2 or 3 weeks before they analyze that.
Yeah,
and that's typical across the whole marketplace at the moment. It's very, very difficult and very, very challenging.
And also, there's a knock-on effect here. So one of the things I really enjoy is when people go on about housing and the government and shelter and all that kind of thing. But really, it's controlled, isn't it, by various organisations. One of those organisations is lending.
Yeah.
And you can't do anything if you can't get a mortgage.
No, exactly. And because of this stamp duty relaxation, there's a mass of people jumping in, and as I've just said, huge numbers just getting declined that maybe 6 months ago would have passed, you know, all day long. So it's a very, very funny situation at the moment.
So I'm also guessing then there's another knock-on situation, which is where people in a chain are finding that the chain is then broken because people can simply not get the finance. And then, so I also expect then that the knock-on effect is, like it used to be 2 in 3 sales would go through, so 1 in 3 would fail. That's what it used to be 20 years ago when I first started out. But I'm guessing that's even higher now because there's more deals falling through because you just can't get the finance.
Yes.
So maybe if you're a cash buyer,
a lot longer to get it as well. More hoops to jump through, more strict. Like I say, the lenders are tightening the screws. I had one classic, you know, this week where, you know, a quality professional person, you know, like earning over $50,000 a year, was declined because normally that their credit rating was fine, it was good, etc. They're old fashioned in that they don't really use credit. They'll pay, you know, petrol on the debit card rather than the credit card. But then from a lender's perspective, your credit file, you know, is not so good. And that's, again, where they go, no, we're not going to lend to you. Whereas 6 months ago, they would have flown through.
Just crazy. So let's talk about rates and that kind of thing. If you can get the mortgage and you can get confirmed and approved by the lender, what sort of rates are we looking at? So let me give you a couple of examples. You can chuck some numbers at me if that's all right, putting you on the spot there. So let's just take a normal buy-to-let. Buy-to-let for me, by the way, is my bread and butter. I love buy-to-let. HMOs are fine, but it's oversaturated with HMOs, I think. But everything just goes back to buy-to-let. That's why I love them. I've got a lot of them. What sort of rates we're looking at and what loan-to-values are we looking at?
Yeah, you've got two situations here. You've got standard buy-to-lets and personal name. Unbelievably, due to, again, coronavirus and bank base rates coming down to 0.01% and so on, you can get buy-to-let mortgages at under 2%. That's unheard of. You know, when I first started, maybe like you in buy-to-lets, your standard rates were about 5% or more. Okay.
Yeah.
Now buy-to-let rates, you can get 2% or less, which is equivalent to, you know, getting a decent residential mortgage at a similar rate. The difference is that due to, again, tax changes recently, a lot of people are incorporating, so they're buying under sort of limited companies, what they call SPV, special purpose vehicles, and the rates there are different, that you're talking of about 3.5% to 4-ish% at the moment.
Yeah.
Okay, so two different camps.
And one of the things I was going to say, just when you mentioned 2%, when I hear those levels, great, the low, and if you've got them, wonderful. But it actually scares me a little bit because being in property 20 years, obviously not in the 80s where interest rates were much, much higher, but 5 or 6% was the norm.
Yeah.
People are buying in at 2% thinking, this is brilliant, look at all the money I make, and they're basing their numbers on their spreadsheet at 2%. Yeah. But when it goes over to, once that initial product finishes, what's it called? What's the variable?
You get the base rate or the standard variable rate and so on.
SVR, yeah, that's it, standard variable rate. And it moves on to that, and that could be much higher or like nobody
typically
knows.
At the moment, it would be around about 4 to 5%.
Yeah. And yeah. I don't think people are putting that into their spreadsheet. They're going, look at this. Or in 2 years, oh, it'll be fine. And actually, I think you need to have a bit more of a vision for what happens after.
Yeah, there is that naivety or lack of historical knowledge because, you know, since 2008, the credit crunch, you know, the rates went down and they've been low, you know, ever since. But there's no reason why, you know, when we start to get back some normality, they may not start to creep up again. Having said that, you've raised a good point. The lenders have thankfully learned the lesson because back in that time, and I'm sure you'll remember, you know, just about anybody with a pulse was going to get a mortgage, okay? Yeah. You know, you had self-cert mortgages. You could certify any type of income, and as long as you put your signature to it, you got the deal. So lenders now do what's called an ICR, interest coverage rate calculation, and they take the view that if it works on a future anticipated interest rate of 5.5%, then they will lend the money. So behind the scenes, they do that calculation. Okay. Yeah. But you're right that the individual investor probably, they might go, well, right, rates might go to 3%, but the lenders are working on a 5.5% typical, what they call a stress test rate.
Yeah. And I stress tested my entire portfolio because I actually stay on standard variable rate on everything these days. And I can't really see that changing, quite honestly. Should I refinance, get a fix for 10 years? Maybe. But, you know, I used to refinance every couple of years. And all I'd do, I'd refinance, I'd keep paying $2,500 a mortgage as a mortgage fee. Yeah. I just kept adding up and up and up. And I'm like, screw this for a game of soldiers. $2,500 per mortgage over 12 months is £200 a month. Over 2 years is £100 a month. It kind of wiped out any savings I was getting. So I made
a decision. Yeah, $2,000 to $3,000 with buy-to-let refinancing is not untypical. Funnily enough, due to COVID, a lot of the lenders now, they might offer you a free valuation or a free solicitors. But for buy-to-lets, that's not typical, et cetera, because they view it, it's a business. So you don't tend to get the freebies that you do on the residential. But of late, they have been doing that. But, you know, I think it's only a short temporary thing anyway.
Let's talk about rates on HMOs. What are we looking at for a HMO? And
funnily enough, during COVID, HMO lending dried up. The lenders took the view that the typical tenant in a HMO might be very much higher risk for losing the jobs. There was also, or there is also, an awful lot of landlords who do student HMOs, okay, an awful lot. And we all know that with COVID and everything else, there was talk that universities going back in September would probably be online. So there would be the take-up for students in HMOs. Yeah. So there's been very much a step back on HMO lending. It's viewed as more risky at the moment. A few lenders have come back. Rates are around about 3.5% to 4.5%. And for example, the likes of Paragon, who is a very long in the tooth established buy-to-let lender and specializes in HMOs, they will not lend to student HMOs, although they have come back on lending to landlords who want to do, let's say, professional HMOs. Yeah. So we've got this, again, very much an up-in-the-air situation with HMOs.
All my HMOs are for professionals anyway, not students. And I went for the postgrad market. So they're in Leeds 6, which is a real student area. And I specifically bought in student areas and decided not to rent to students. Right. The idea being, I like going against the grain in case you never noticed. But the idea behind that was that people who go to university, the last thing they want to do is then go home to mum and dad. They want to continue the journey and the fun that they've had. And I've lived that lifestyle too. Although I never went to uni, but I had friends that did, so I ended up living that lifestyle too. I can tell you some stories, gate crashing parties, and also it's really cool. So they want to stay in that environment, but they have to go get a job. And so they go get a job, and then they're starting to save up a bit of money and not spend a lot. So they stay for 2 or 3 years. That's my experience. Whereas HMOs, I think the people in HMOs maybe stay for 12 or 18 months just to find their feet a little bit.
Yeah.
So I don't know how accurate that is, but that was my thinking at the time. We've had people in HMOs for like 6 years, which is wow. You know, which is crazy. But the other side of this now, what I've noticed is that there is an older market in HMOs coming through. So the average age used to be 25, 28, you know, people who left uni and got a job. Now it's people in their 40s and 50s who are going through separations, they've lost their job, run long-term sick.
Yeah.
And that for me is actually a better client than a 24-year-old, because they've gone through, they've had all their dramas at 50. The last thing they want is a drama or an argument with someone in the thing or losing a job every 2 minutes. Yeah. So that worked really well for me. What's your experience on HMOs?
Yeah, likewise, that's a good summary. I think also more so down south, London way, HMOs is becoming more and more the norm because property prices are just so expensive, people just can't afford to be getting their own place, particularly if they've gone through a divorce, for example. And I liken it to the, you know, American sitcom Friends, where, you know, that's now probably 30 years old, but it's in Manhattan and nobody can afford to get their own place. And even young professionals and getting older, they're all sharing a property, you know, even a flat in Manhattan. Yeah. And it's a true reflection of what I think we'll be seeing. We see it already in London, where prices are just so expensive. Maybe not so much in Leeds or Manchester, but I can see a trend.
But I think there's a difference on that north-south as well. So in London, you're getting places £800-900 a month in a shared house.
Yeah.
Whereas obviously £800-900 a month is a two-bed flat. But then you've got council tax, gas, water, electricity, Wi-Fi, broadband, TV license, and so on, that pushes up the price by another £200-300.
Sure.
But in Leeds, for example, you can get a HMO room for like £300 all bills in, which I think is such a bargain. And people go, well, maybe I'll get a studio at £550. We just got a studio we rented out yesterday at £550. But on top of that, you've got council tax, another £100. All your bills on top. Before you know it, that £550 turns into £700, maybe £750 a month. And so it's, do I get a room at £350 or do I buy a, do I get a flat?
Yeah, it's the lifestyle balance as well.
Yeah.
Let's say to have the, you know, go out and have a meal and plan for a holiday, etc. And you know, also hopefully, as you said, use it as a stepping stone because you can save to get your own place eventually.
Yeah.
And I think the current COVID situation has highlighted that because I, again, and all other brokers have had a disproportionate number of first-time buyers knocking on our door for trying to get mortgages. And lenders have actually were lending at 90-95%. Those deals have gone. Occasionally a lender will stick head above the parapet again and say, oh, I've got a deal. It happened the other weekend. Coventry launched a 90% deal on the Friday. On the Monday, they pulled it because they've been absolutely blitzed. They bought, for argument's sake, 100, 200 million on the wholesale money markets. And within a day or two, it's gone because there's a dearth of lenders lending at 90%, which is the typical first-time buyer territory. And it's gone.
It's very interesting.
And it's a different situation altogether now.
The other thing I find quite interesting is we talk about rents going up and Section 24, which has pushed rents up. And everybody's moaning about rents going up. And then conversely, a gleeful when they hear that a landlord's about to sell up because he can't afford to be a landlord anymore. And I'm like, guys, this is part of the same problem.
Yeah.
It's like trying to make a swimming pool in a rowing boat and getting excited when you make a hole in it. Do you know what I mean? It's just kind of beggars belief. Let's talk about equity release, if that's all right.
Yes, sure.
So equity release, just explain what it is and explain, because I think there's two levels in equity release. There's one where your parents are getting older, they might need to go into a home, or they might just want to release some money. And then there's a second one where their children, who are not kids but grown-up adults, adult children, need a deposit on a house, especially maybe now because there's no stamp duty and now's the time to move, but they haven't got the deposit. So can you talk to me about those two areas?
To use the second one first, because that is, as you said, you hit the nail on the head, very popular at the moment. It's a case of bank of mum and dad. Okay, so in the majority of cases, you've got to retirement age, you've got your typical house. You know, the average house price in the UK is 250,000. So mum and dad have paid off the mortgage. They've probably settled in that area. They go to the local bowls club or whatever, and they don't want to move. But then the kids come along and say, look, mum and dad, price is so high now. We're struggling buying somewhere half decent, etc. Can you help us out? So mum and dad can, at that age, say between about 65 and 75, release anywhere from 25 to 30% of the value of the house. So let's say they release £50,000 to help the kids to get a deposit on the mortgage. The great thing about that is that you can do it quite easily and quickly, and there are no monthly mortgage payments to make. All that happens is that the interest rate, it could be, say, 3, 4%, rolls up. And then one day, when the second person dies, the house is sold, the kids can sell it, get the maximum price, and whatever interest has rolled up, let's say the 50 has rolled up to 75, then they pay it off, okay? And then the rest is there as their future inheritance. So it's basically viewed as an advance on the inheritance.
Yeah.
And, you know, the kids benefit from that today because the parents may live for another 15, 20 years typically. Mm. Yeah, so everybody gains, the parents can help out the kids and the kids get what they need to get on the property ladder.
So from an inheritance tax point of view, first of all, there's no tax because it's technically a loan. It's just being rolled up and paid at the end when the asset is sold.
Yeah.
So, and what's inheritance tax start? Is it 240,000? Is that?
I think it's 235 or something, whatever it is.
Let's call it 235 then. So if you've got a house worth 400, you might as well roll up the 170 grand. And this is not financial advice, by the way, because I'm not qualified. But you might as well roll up the 170 grand, pull that out, pass it on to the kids now, and leave it at 235 where there's no tax.
Mum and dad, they've got two lots of allowances, and it's about 700,000 for the parents.
Oh, is it? Right, okay. I didn't know
the vast majority of parents living in a 250,000, 500,000 pound house, you know, there's no tax on it. Anyway, there'll be potentially... depends without getting complicated, other taxes that are payable. But as a generalisation, under 700,000, they're fine.
You see, 3% does sound cheap, but when I'm running the numbers in my head, like times that by 10, that's at least 30% without it compounding. That's 30% off. It's a big whack. But then conversely, like, do you want to die before you give your kids the chance to buy their own house? Or would you like to...
Exactly. And you're helping your kids out today when they're asking for the money today. Okay.
Yeah, of course.
But the kids could always say, look, mum and dad, you know, you've lent us, let's say lent us, most cases, 99% of the time, it's viewed as an advance on inheritance. But there are some schemes that allow you to pay the interest element. So the kids could say, okay, we'll pay you the 3% per month. Yeah, so that 50,000 stays static at 50,000.
It just gets on the housing ladder, doesn't it?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, even if it amounts to 75 grand and the parents die in 15, 20 years, whatever the case is, that property at 250 in 15 years' time could be worth another 50 or 75,000 pounds.
Plus the other property that the children have
got. Correct. Yeah. But then the kids know that it's an advance on inheritance. So if they've got, in inverted commas, 25 grand less, but it's helped them get on the property ladder 15 years ago, nobody's really going to complain.
Yeah. You see, one of the reasons I got into property, it was, I can't quite remember it, but it was a throwaway line where house prices had gone up and somebody just said, I wish I'd have bought 10 now. And that got me thinking. I was like, maybe I should buy 10. And then obviously you get carried away, don't you?
You do. Yes.
Buy a lot more. Amazing. Okay, so if somebody wants equity release, what's the best first step, do you think?
Very simple. Give me a call. We'll run through the simple numbers. And I just need to know approximate value of the house, what they're looking at raising, and the reason why. They allow capital raise for just about any reason. If you, after COVID, have decided that life's a bit short and you've had a scare and you want to do a round-the-world trip, etc., you can raise money for that. Okay.
The lending's less strict because it's an asset that you already own.
Correct, that's free
and clear, right?
And you don't. What? It doesn't matter about your credit rating or anything.
Okay.
Again, which is very beneficial because, like I say, they will lend. If you're about 75, they might lend maximum 30, 35% against the value of property, because then they always know that that accumulated interest, you'll never have what's called negative equity.
Yeah. Okay?
So that your kids will always inherit something.
Yeah. And if there's a mortgage already on the property, I assume that's fine.
No, it would have to be paid off with those funds. But by the time, most people have paid off the mortgage anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because it has a first charge. Yeah,
got it. Okay.
A lot of people will do it for home improvements. They'll want the nice conservatory for the retirement or similar. But again, like I say, an awful lot of late now, it's been mostly to helping out the kids.
Awesome. I've got it. Yeah. Wicked. Right, we've come to the end of our time. Thanks a lot for that, Richard. That was really cool. We should do this again next month.
Thank you, Daniel.
Yeah, it is, as always. And next time, maybe we'll do this at the beach just to annoy you even more.
Hey!
Right, have yourself a good day. And thank you, everybody, for watching as well. We appreciate it. You can come and check this out on the podcast, or you can watch the entire replay on YouTube. Other than that, we'll speak to you soon. Thank you, Richard. And thank you, everybody, for watching. Take care.
Thanks, Dan.
Hey, it's Dan here. Thank you for listening. Really appreciate each and every one of you. Please click like or subscribe to the entire podcast.